Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron. Hey everyone, welcome back. Look, here's the reality. No one wants to be in debt, right? But life happens. And if you've got debt, well, life's happened to you. Whether you have a rolling balance of $2,000 on your credit card or an $80,000 line of credit, you are positive that you'll carry to your grave. Debt can be a huge cause of stress affecting both your emotional and financial wellness. Well, after working with thousands of financial planning clients, Shannon Lee Simmons knows that your only way out of that debt cycle is to truly understand all of your spending triggers so you can shut them down for good. In Living Debt Free, that's her new book, Living Debt Free, she shows you that it's possible to have a life and pay down debt at the same time. Who'd have thunk? In fact, that's the only way your debt plan will work. So you're going to learn to take control of your finances and pay down your debt in a realistic way that'll keep you motivated long enough to see it through to the end. No shame, no blame, no scare tactics. In Living Debt Free, her new book, Shannon focuses on creating a debt repayment plan that will motivate you for a very long time, rather than an unrealistic one that's strictly about paying the least amount of interest charges. Who does that? Listen, everyone knows that paying interest on debt is bad and to be avoided as much as possible. It's not rocket science, as they say, but human beings are complex. Life is complex. Debt is complex. So there can't be a one-size-fits-all plan. So Living Debt-Free will help you build your plan, the one that will help you finally put the debt behind you, start fresh, and feel good about your money again. Our HarperCollins Canada author today, the last one for 2018, is Shannon Lee Simmons. She is a certified financial planner, chartered investment manager, life coach, speaker, and the founder of the award-winning New School of Finance, and a heck of a lot more. She joins us right now from the big city of Tirana. I want to get right into the awkwardness of what you do, because you live in a world that I just don't get. I really don't. So I like to boil things down, and I think people in your industry complicate stuff far too much. So how much of what you teach can be boiled down to practicing delayed gratification and living below your means? Is that not it?
It is it. That's the recipe. That's literally it. However, I think the pathway to those things is difficult for a lot of us, including myself even sometimes. I mean, we all mess up. We all know ice cream isn't healthy, and yet in the summertime, there's lineups outside of an ice cream shop. Why is that? Just like we all know that, you know, debt is bad or overspending isn't ideal for our finances, and yet every now and then we all catch ourselves doing it. Why is that? So I have a theory that, you know, money has nothing to do with math, because if it did, we would all just live within our means and have delayed gratification and no one would be in any sort of financial trouble. But life doesn't always work like that.
Okay, well, that's the end of this interview. All the best. Take care. look, let's go into it to just the phrase, right? Living debt free. Let's just go to that phrase. I call baloney is the right word you can say on radio. I call baloney. Like, you can't, I don't know many people who can buy a house outright. So being debt free it's a mirage, isn't it? Or are you just talking about living debt-free with everything else except house debt? But what about car debt? Or are you just talking about everything else except car debt and house debt? And then, so what about this one? And then, I mean, at what point do we draw the line and say, no, I will not go in debt for anything? I mean, is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm definitely not including mortgages in that because I agree with you. I think in the modern world, it's almost impossible to have no mortgage or anything until maybe later in life. However, living debt-free could mean your mortgage if you're nearing retirement, right? So I think it really depends on what phase you are in life. The book focuses so on consumer debt, which would include car loans, because car loans can take a heck of a lot of money out of your checking account every single month. And a lot of times that can be crippling to your cash flow. And so the sooner you free up that car loan, the more cash flow is back in your pocket. But I would say to get, you know, very specific, the book, and when I say living debt free, I'm really talking about being consumer debt free, right? So we don't have debt that is caused from overspending, that is robbing money from our bank accounts that we can't keep up with. That's what I mean by living debt free. And I would prioritize them with consumer debt first, including student loans, tax debt, all of that. And then I would look at car loans and lump those in. And then if you've got none of those, you're very lucky and you've probably been very astute with your finances, then I would focus on the mortgage. So it's almost like a prioritization. And I do believe that it's possible to live without consumer debt, even if you still have a mortgage. I believe that's absolutely possible. And I think that that's what a lot of people want to do. They just don't really know how to get there.
Okay, so I'm assuming you did this. I'm assuming that you live this way. Because if you don't, then you're a bit of a big fat hypocrite.
That would be super hypocritical. And I think that I live both ways. So I think I'm a human. I make mistakes just like anybody else. And I think that for a financial expert to sit there and preach perfection or abstinence from credit cards is just bonkers. I think that's so out of touch with reality. I think that that doesn't actually get to the heart of the matter. We can open up the internet or a book and see that interest is bad and saving is good. I don't think that I need to sit here and preach that to anybody. But so I do live a life where I don't have consumer debt right now, but that doesn't mean I never have. So I have been in a situation before when I first quit my job on Bay Street and then started my own business. I was completely naive. I did not properly plan for it. I thought everything was going to work out hunky-dory. Guess what? It didn't. I ended up taking on credit card debt and really losing track of myself in that time because I felt so hopeless. I felt like there was no point in trying because it was so scary. And that experience was so important for me as a financial planner to have that shame and that burden that comes with that, because I'm supposed to be a financial planner. I'm supposed to have all the answers, right? And so going through an experience like that where I was taking on consumer debt, like high interest rate credit card debt, like the worst kind, and then I had to pull money out of my RRSP to pay it off, like cardinal sin of financial planning, I learned something about myself, and I also, it got me off my high horse about debt. Because I'm a person who's responsible, who knows what's up financially. I have all the tools at my disposal. I'm in the know. And yet I still found myself in a situation of spiraling debt and ignoring it.
Wow.
And I know. And so I course corrected. And that was, I'm still, that was in 2010. So it's a long, long time ago. And everything's been fine since then. But if somebody with all the tools and tips and tricks and knowledge can be like that, well, I think that that makes us all pretty human. I think it's a pretty human thing to have debt.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah, really well said. By the way, I just saw a really, really interesting and very well done little Christmas video online starring someone named Shannon Lee Simmons. Well done. Like, who put that together?
I did. I wrote it. I didn't film it, obviously. I have a videographer company called Sore Thumb. They work with us at New School to do our production. But I got the idea to rewrite 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, but only make it about what happens if Santa had to pay for Christmas on credit. Like, what would happen? And I got the idea just in a parking lot one day here in Toronto. I just heard people talking, being so frustrated about the holidays and all the stress, and it's so expensive. And they wish that they didn't it wasn't about that. And I hear that a lot. And so it was one of those things that's like, we look to Santa Claus to like create the magic, but what if Santa had no magic? And then what would happen? It would just be like every other parent who's freaking out that they have to afford all this stuff to make Christmas awesome. And so I just wanted to make, you know, light of that situation and kind of remind people that it doesn't necessarily, it's not about what you spend at the holidays, and you don't have to overspend and put yourself in a financial hole just to feel good about the holidays.
Yeah. Well, you need to check it out online. I'm sure. Can people find the link to it on your website?
Yeah, it's on our website, newschooloffinance.com. And it's also on our YouTube channel. And it's also on our Instagram and our Twitter and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so newschooloffinance.com. Well, anyway, I thought it was great. Really well done. Okay, I got to be honest. At the beginning, I went, oh, this is going to be schmaltzy. And then, no, it turned out really, really well. And it actually, I don't know, I think it actually put me in a better mood as far as Christmas is concerned, because, you know, I like to live below my means. I'm a bit of a minimalist. A couple of years ago, I walked the Camino, which is a big pilgrimage over in Spain, and everything I had in my life was in a backpack for 3 months. And that was one exercise that taught me just to live with less. And yeah. I think that's a huge part of your message in that Christmas video.
Yeah, it's not about all the stuff. And the my favorite line is, I'm afraid the Easter Bunny and Tooth Fairy will judge, because I think that that's something that a lot of us, that's one of the reasons that a lot of us overspend, is meeting the expectations or our perceived expectations of what other people have on us, right? So yeah. If I show up to this holiday Christmas party and I don't have a gift, even though everyone else has one, like I'm going to look like a cheap person, or I'm going to look like I don't make a living, or there's going to be judgment placed on me. So I better just not bring it up, buy the thing that I don't really want to spend money on, and just shut up and do it, because that's what's expected of me. And I think that a lot of those expectations come around the holidays, also with weddings, but a lot of them come around the holidays, and that's when I find people overspend the most, and it's not actually fulfilling for them. They don't want to be spending that money, but they feel compelled to meet these expectations of other people. So I think that we all need to, as a society, like for the common good, just chill and lower our expectations on ourselves and other people, because it's tough out there for a lot of us. And I think that we could all spend a little bit less money and be a little bit happier.
You mentioned weddings, and there was a season, I think everybody goes through this, a season where, oh, holy cow, like one summer you get invited to 37 weddings. It's ridiculous. And it'll break you if you're not smart about it. So what I figured out was, Shannon, I went and picked out a card that said, I wrote in, I said, congratulations, what a beautiful day. I hope you find this gift really useful in your kitchen. And then I put the card in the envelope, licked the envelope, sealed the envelope, and then threw the envelope in amongst the presents. What do you think? Every year I get a thank you card back. We want to thank you for that beautiful gift where it's going to come in really useful in our kitchen. There's no gift. Come on.
Wow. I've never heard of someone doing that before.
It's a bit of a low point in my life, but yeah.
I can't say that I might have done it, but I will give you credit for the cleverness. I definitely think that it's clever.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. There seems to be some amazing correlations, I think. Maybe I'm nuts here, but between going into debt and getting fat, or getting out of debt and getting in shape. I want to start with the best excuses and justifications when it comes to gaining weight or going into debt. Do you see that correlation?
I don't see it as excuses. I think that feels like a really shamey and judgy way to put things.
Oh,
so
well, that's, you totally read me right there. I am.
Yeah, you're very, you can be a bit judgy, can't you, Drew?
Just a little bit. It's one of my spiritual gifts, actually. Yep.
Yeah. I'm not of that mindset. So and actually that's one of the things that I think is part of the problem, is that just exactly what you're saying, not to put you on the hot seat or anything, but
no.
That mentality of those who do not have debt, sitting and saying, passing judgment with like, well, what are your excuses? What are the best excuses you've got? It is immediately like there's something wrong with that person who has debt, right? And so instead of saying, what are the reasons? What are the excuses? The very, very specific words that are different and they mean different things. So I'm not going to answer the excuses part. I will say, what are the reasons that people are in debt? And I think that this is an important distinction. So I have never met a person ever who wants to be in debt? I have never had someone say, oh man, I can't wait till I'm in debt, Shannon. That's not a thing that anyone has ever said to me. So
in keeping with what I mentioned, even though I'll try to sound a little less judgy, it's the same thing, the same parallels with, you've never met a person who said, you know what, when I grow up, I want to be really overweight.
I'm not sure. I can't speak to that. It's not my, I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not, I have no idea, but I know what you're saying. And I think that often, you know, if we were, they get compared often, fitness and finances, because in the new year, you always get those new year, new you, you know, promises, and often meeting some sort of ideal fitness level that's unattainable for a lot of people, or some financial goals that create these aggressive, over-aggressive financial plans that end up to failure. Both of them lead to failure. And it's because they overpromise. They're unrealistic for everybody's daily life. And so the commonality that I will agree with is that fitness plans and get rich quick plans or pay off your debt in 6 months plans, the same thing that's happening in both of those are people are marketing an ideal from a place of absolute judgment. Second of all, they're overpromising what is what is possible. And the solution is often so unrealistic for the everyday person that they wind up failing, the guilt and the shame perpetuate, and they end up in it all over again. And so that I will agree that there's a common thread between the two. Mm. And with debt, which I think is an important distinction, I don't believe that it's excuses. I believe that there are reasons. And so because nobody wants to be in debt, whatever it was that took somebody from being a non-debtor to a person with debt is usually a pretty big deal. It's not like a pair of Gucci shoes. The people that I'm seeing are everyday middle-class Canadians, and no one's sitting there buying like $3,000 Prada bags. That's not a thing. And so
Hold on. What's a Prada bag?
Probably a dated fashionable thing that I'm not that cool. So I said it because The Devil Wears Prada was a book that came out in 2009. Oh, okay. It's like a very high fashion, purse.
Oh, it's a purse. Okay. Got it.
It's
yeah.
And Prada is the brand name, but, okay. But either way, people aren't buying like brand name bags for $3,000 or something. So most of the time, what took someone from being a person without debt to a person with debt, excluding mortgage, obviously. Okay. And even car loan, excluding those. Like their cat got sick and they needed $2,000 at the vet, or they had to go back to school and they had to retrain after a layoff, or they got laid off and they ran through their emergency fund because they were laid off for longer than 3 months that they anticipated, or an aging parent needed help. These are the kinds of reasons, not excuses, where people end up stepping out of the non-debt situation into a debt situation. And so now they've got debt. And now they have less money every month because there's a minimum payment that they have to pay to financially survive all the same things that they had to before, but now on less money. And inevitably, life will throw lemons at you again and again. So what happens to people that accumulate a lot of credit card debt or a lot of consumer debt is something happened that put them into a situation that they now carry debt, and they could not successfully navigate paying that back and financially surviving at the same time. And then they took on more and more, and their income gets less and less. And then where I think you want me to go with this, which I do agree, not everyone with debt, you know, is because of illness or layoff or whatever. But I would argue you that it often starts that way. And then once somebody with debt hits a tipping point where they just give up, that's the kind of irresponsible spending that you're talking about, where it's just like, screw it. There's no point in trying. So like, if you already have $4,000 on a credit card, what's another $400? And that mentality does creep in. And that's where most people without debt think that everybody with debt is like from the get-go. Like, oh, screw it. I'll just do whatever I want. I want this now. But it's often that mentality and that kind of hopelessness comes later after someone's been battling for some time. And the reasons that they're in debt have nothing to do with greed or instant gratification. And I think that we need to change the language that we use around it, because that stigma is going to continue otherwise.
Well, that's why you need to get this book, because There are so many books about taking back control of your finances and living debt-free, blah, 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 blah. But I have not come across a book that has as much light associated with it as this one. NewSchoolOfFinance.com is the website. Shannon Lee Simmons is the author. Living Debt Free is the name of the book. And the reason it's being recommended by me is because it's not a pounce on you book. It's not a, you could have called it Living Debt and Guilt Free. You are really encouraging people and giving them some wise counsel instead of pouncing on them. And I think that the reason so many dudes who write books about this stuff come off sounding like I just sounded in the conversation, I don't know. I think it takes the heart of a woman to be able to look at all the different angles in this whole thing and go, look, guys, stop with the crappy language. Stop with the pouncing mentality and the blame and the shame and everything else that goes with it. There are reasons for everything. Now, let's look at those reasons and let's get behind why you're in debt. That's why you're rocking this thing, Shannon.
Oh, well, thank you. And I think that it may not be about gender. It might just be more about willingness to be vulnerable. And I think that that often can be something that, you know, you find with like a female financial planner or something versus a male one, is that there's an openness and a willingness to share.
Yeah.
That may not come if everyone's just having a big peacock contest, you know. So I do think that there's a warmth and an empathy that's necessary when all kinds of financial planning, not just debt. Like, we deal with clients who have it going on, you know, and there's still, my first book, Worry Free Money, I talk about that feeling of broke. And I have clients who, you know, make 40 grand a year, and I have clients who make $140,000 a year, and they all feel broke. And so there's a feeling of inadequacy and broke and that kind of thing that you can pick up on if people are willing to share their story with you.
Okay, two quick either or questions and then we'll let you go. You ready?
Yeah.
Rent or buy?
Buy if huge, massive caveat, if you can afford it. And so that, my friend, is where that's the rub. So I think that if you can afford a home, which means not only did you get the mortgage that you are pre-approved for, you can also still afford to put money into TFSAs and RRSPs, and you can still afford to put money into a repair and maintenance fund, you know, the 1% of the value of the house. I think that's an affordable house, in which case you can afford that. Check, go do that.
I'm just wondering, would it not also, would this information not play into this conversation? It also depends where the market is at. So if it's a buyer's market and you can afford it, buy. But if it's a seller's market, why would you buy? Wait.
Because I think that trying to make predictions in the real estate market is a crapshoot, and I think people get lucky. I don't think that their predictions, they're not profit, they're not psychic. So someone could say, hey, you know, we could argue for sure that the last 5 to 10 years has been a seller's market because of the insane real estate prices. And I get that. But a lot of times people are trying to buy a home because they don't want to leave the neighborhood where their kids are going to school. And so it has nothing to do with that. They can't wait because they can't afford to rent in that place, but maybe they have an opportunity to buy it or something. And if they're going to be there for 20 years, then whether it's a seller's market or a buyer's market is going to change 10 times by the time they go to sell. So I wouldn't get caught up on trying to guess what's going to happen next and trying to guess where we're at in a market cycle. It's the same with investing because it's luck. A lot of it is luck, or good or bad. But if you're trying to buy a house, not to flip it, but to buy a home that you're going to live in, then it doesn't really matter what's going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years because you can't control that. It's completely out of your control. So buy what you can afford regardless of whether it's a buyer's or a seller's market, because if you can only afford $600,000, you can only afford $600,000, period, full stop. And so that would be my advice there. So buy if you can afford it, but don't overstretch. And that's where I get into the renting game. Because too often I see people, I'm saying this in quotations, think they can afford way more than what they actually can, because on paper they think that nothing will ever go wrong, that the repair and maintenance will be low on a house, their income will go up over time, and they'll make up for those retirement savings later on down the road. So they buy a house that's actually out of their reach. They end up house poor, and that's actually financially worse, I think, than renting. And so at that point, I would say, if we're comparing a scenario of overspending on a house and being house poor versus renting, I'm all about that rental life. Because it, with renting, at least you can control your cut. You can, you know what it is every month, and there's no surprises. You can budget around that, and you can make up for the, you know, all the Home Depot trips you don't go on and put them in your RRSP.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, final one. Tax-free savings accounts or RRSPs?
Tax-free savings accounts. If I had to pick one for everybody for the rest of my life, it would be a tax-free savings account. I love them both, and I think in tandem is the ideal scenario. But if you are like, have a gun against my head and I have to choose, it would be TFSA. And the reason is the tax-sheltered nature of that account, the growth that is possible if you invest it over, you know, especially for young people, over like 20 to 30 years, when you're in retirement and you're pulling money out of that account, it doesn't get added to your income. So it's not considered income like the money coming from an RRSP that eventually turns into a RIF. So you don't risk clawing back any of your pensions down the road. So that's super, super helpful. And what I would also argue is that that tax refund, the deduction that comes from money going into the RRSP, is really helpful for people in a top income bracket. But if you're not in one of those top income brackets, then you are putting money in there, not getting the biggest return that you possibly could, because maybe you're paying tax at the lowest rate. And so if you can only afford to max out the TFSA, then you're probably not in an income bracket that's really going to take advantage of that RRSP. You're probably not making 85 plus. And so my advice to people is always this: max out the TFSA first, and then put the rest of your annual savings into the RRSP. Because I catch everyone in that place. If you're a lower income and you can only do up to the TFSA limit for that year, then you're probably a person that wants to lock down as many government pensions as possible down the road, and your income isn't that high that the RRSP refund is going to be like 40%, because you're just not in an income bracket that you're going to take advantage of that. And if you are a person who can not only max out the TFSA but also put money into your RRSP, then you are taking advantage of the tax deduction at a high rate, and you're also kind of lowering the amount that's going to be in your RIFs, that you're lowering your taxable income for yourself in retirement, which means that you may not get your old age security clawed back.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, now you know why you need to go to newschoolofinance.com. Now you know why you need to get the book, Living Debt Free. Now you know why you need to get to know Shannon Lee Simmons. Honestly, I tune out a lot when it comes to money conversations. Have my entire life. But you're very easy to listen to. You make a lot of sense. You speak the regular Joe's language. And I really appreciate what you do. I really do. Thank you, Shannon.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I'm glad you liked the Christmas video.
Oh, it was the best. It was so good. Well, listen, Merry Christmas. And yeah, thank you so much for just being so normal about this weird topic.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and Merry Christmas to you too.
All right, Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
Bye.